the tin can with sticks. We sounded so much like Indians that they came over to ask if that was what we were. This was the beginning of our friendship. We taught them how to make sounds and dance like Indians, and they showed us how to ride their bikes and skate. Actually, I was the only one who learned. Adeline and Junior were too small and too scared, although they got a kick out of watching us. I was 7, Adeline 5, and Junior 3, and this was the first time we had ever had other children to play with. Sometimes they would take us over to their playhouse. Katie and Bill, the children of the Whites that owned the furniture store, had a model playhouse at the side of their parents' house. That little house was just like the big house, painted snow white on the outside with real furniture in it. I envied their playhouse more than I did their bikes and skates. Here they were playing in a house that was nicer than any house I could have dreamed of living in. They had all this to offer me, and I had nothing to offer them but the field of clover in summer and the apple crates under the pecan tree. The Christmas after we moved there, I thought sure Mama would get us some skates, but she didn't. We didn't get anything but a couple of apples and oranges. I cried for a week for those skates, I remember. Every Saturday evening, Mama would take us to the movies. The Negro sat upstairs in the balcony, and the Whites sat downstairs. One Saturday, we arrived at the movies at the same time as the White children. When we saw each other, we ran and met. Katie walked straight into the downstairs lobby, and Adeline, Junior, and I followed. Mama was talking to one of the White women and didn't notice that we had walked into the White lobby. I think she thought we were at the side entrance we had always used, which led to the balcony. We were standing in the White lobby with our friends when Mama came in and saw us. "Come on! Come on!" she yelled, pushing Adeline's face on into the door. "Essie Mae, I'm gonna try my best to kill you when I get you home. I told you about running up in these stores and things like you own 'em," she shouted, dragging me through the door. When we got outside, we stood there crying, and we could hear the White children crying inside the White lobby. After that, Mama didn't even let us stay at the movies. She carried us right home. All the way back to our house, Mama kept telling us that we couldn't sit downstairs. We couldn't do this or that with White children. Up until that time, I had never really thought about it. After all, we were playing together. I knew that we were going to separate schools and all, but I never knew why. After the movie incident, the White children stopped playing in front of our house. For about 2 weeks, we didn't see them at all. Then one day they were there again and we started playing. But things were not the same. I had never really thought of them as white before. Now all of a sudden they were white, and their whiteness made them better than me. I now realize that not only were they better than me because they were white, but everything they owned and everything connected with them was better than what was available to me. I hadn't realized before that downstairs in the movies was any better than upstairs. But now I saw that it was. Their whiteness provided them with a pass to downstairs in that nice section, and my blackness sent me to the balcony. Now that I was thinking about it, their schools, homes, and streets were better than mine. They had a large red brick school with nice sidewalks connecting the buildings. Their homes were large and beautiful with indoor toilets and every other convenience that I knew of at the time. Every house I had ever lived in was a one- or two-room shack with an outdoor toilet. It really bothered me that they had all these nice things and we had nothing. "There is a secret to it besides being white," I thought. Then my mind got all wrapped up in trying to uncover that secret. One day when we were all playing in our playhouse in the ditch under the pecan tree, I got a crazy idea. I thought the secret was their privates. I had seen everything they had but their privates, and it wasn't any different than mine. So I made up a game called The Doctor. I had never been to a doctor myself. However, Mama had told us that a doctor was the only person that could look at children's naked bodies besides their parents. Then I remembered the time my Grandma Winnie was sick. When I asked her what the doctor had done to her, she said, "He examined me." Then I asked her about examined, and she told me he looked at her teeth, in her ears, checked her heart, blood, and privates. Now I was going to be the doctor. I had all of them, Katie, Bill, Sandra, and Paul, plus Adeline and Junior, take off their clothes and stand in line as I sat on one of the apple crates and examined them. I looked in their mouths and ears, put my ear to their hearts to listen for their heartbeats. Then I had them lie down on the leaves, and I looked at their privates. I examined each of them about 3 times, but I didn't see any differences. I still hadn't found that secret. That night, when I was taking my bath, soaping myself all over, I thought about it again. I remember the day I had seen my 2 uncles, Sam and Walter. They were just as white as Katie them. But Grandma Winnie was darker than Mama, so how could Sam and Walter be white? I must have been thinking about it for a long time, because Mama finally called out, "Essie Mae, stop using up all that soap and hurry up so Adeline and Junior can bathe before that water gets cold." "Mama," I said, "why ain't Sam and Walter white?" "'Cause they mama ain't white," she answered. "But you say a long time ago they daddy is white." "If the daddy is white and the mama is colored, then that don't make the children white." "But they got the same hair and color like Bill and Katie them got," I said. "That still don't make them white. Now get out of that tub," she snapped. Every time I tried to talk to Mama about white people, she got mad. Now I was more confused than before. If it wasn't the straight hair and the white skin that made you white, then what was it? In the summer, Mr. Johnson would drive down to Florida in a big trailer truck and bring it back running over with watermelons. Then he would sell them to the stores and markets in Centerville and nearby towns. Often Mrs. Johnson would go with him now that school was out, and she wasn't teaching. When she went, I would stay with Miss Ola. Miss Ola was a very nice old lady. She would bake cookies, candy, or something for us every Saturday. She had a little bell that she used to ring for us to come over when she had cooked us something or wanted one of us to help her in the yard. We always sat out in the clover on Saturdays and listened for that little bell. I learned to like Miss Ola even more when I started staying with her at night. She liked me very much, too, and we had lots of fun together when I was there. Mrs. Johnson had a shaky little rollaway bed that I was supposed to sleep on in the dining room, which was right next to Miss Ola's room. I never did sleep much on it, though. Before going to bed, I had 100 chores to do for Miss Ola. First, I had to scratch her white hair and brush it. Then I cleaned her false teeth, got water in a foot tub for her to soak her feet in, and 1,000 other little things. It would be about 12 o'clock at night before I got in that little shaky bed. But as soon as I got in, Miss Ola would call me into her room and read to me. She slept in one of those old antebellum beds with big posts covered with a flowered canopy. It was high with big soft feather mattresses. I had to use a stool to get up in it. Most of the time, as soon as Miss Ola started reading, I was so tired that I fell asleep. I would just look up at that flowered canopy, close my eyes, and I was out cold, sleeping down. I guess I never heard a single story she read to me. During those nights with Miss Ola, I had access to the first bathroom I had ever used. I had never had such a privilege before. I used to go in that bathroom and sit on the stool even if I didn't have to use it. I would just sit there and look at that big, beautiful white tub, the pink curtain that hung over it, the pink washing powder in the big, beautiful glass container, the sink with pink soap in the soap tray. It all looked so good to me. There was a small, round, pink rug in front of the stool. I would take my shoes off as I sat on the stool and just run my feet all over that soft rug. Sometimes I would stay in there so long, Miss Ola would come in to see what I was doing. After taking my first bath in that beautiful white tub, I hated our round tin tub every time I bathed in it. I liked everything about the Johnsons' house. There was always soft music playing on the radio as I did my little chores. The house was large and spacious with beautiful furniture all the way through it. It was everything. Ours wasn't. I kept trying to learn the white folks' secret from Miss Ola. When I asked her questions about it, she didn't get mad like Mama, but she still didn't tell it to me. However, there was one secret I learned. That was why all white women had colored women working for them, because they were lazy. Mama would clean that house up for those white folks every single day. She would make the beds, dust the furniture, run the vacuum, and clean the bath. Then she would cook 3 meals a day, too. After eating the food Miss Ola made, I could see Mama had to do the cooking because white women didn't know how. Miss Ola had a cold one night when I was staying with her, and I saw her make some soup. She was coughing and mucus was running out of her nose and dripping right into the pot. Miss Ola was so old, she had lost control of her bladder. Every time she coughed, pee ran down her legs. Then she would wipe it off the floor with a dish towel. When she set some of that snotty pea soup in front of me, my stomach turned inside out. Now, when she would ring that little bell for us on Saturday, Adeline and Junior ran over there, but I didn't. I finally realized what Mama meant when she said, "Miss Ola gonna kill y'all with that shit she cooks." Adeline and Junior started school the second year we lived on the Johnson's place. Now that they were in school, I had a problem on my hands. Junior was only 4 and a half and Adeline 6. Mama started him early because she didn't have anyone to keep him or for him to play with while Adeline and I were in school. He wouldn't stay in his classroom because he thought he belonged with me and Adeline. I was now 9 years old and in the 4th grade. Junior would follow Adeline everywhere she went. Sometimes I would look up and he was standing outside my classroom door peeping in. I think I must have taken him to his classroom at least 10 times a day. During the lunch hour, he would follow me all over the campus, holding onto my skirt tail. I would send him to play with the other boys. Then, a few minutes later, he came running around the corner, telling me some boy was chasing him. Mama was seeing the soldier again. He was out of the army now, and he didn't wear his uniform anymore. So now we called him Raymond instead of the soldier. He was coming to the house every other night now. When he was there, he would help us with our lessons. Mama never did help us. She said she only had finished 6th grade, and she could barely read my 4th grade reader. But Raymond had almost finished high school. He could read and work arithmetic better than my teacher. I didn't need much help from Raymond because Miss Ola helped me a lot when I stayed with her. She had taught me lots of words and showed me how to spell and write them, too. Because of Miss Ola's help, I made all A's in reading and spelling. In arithmetic, with a little help from Raymond, I made B's. In no time at all, I was doing my homework without any help from anyone. Adeline and Junior were the big problems. Raymond had to work so hard with them. He would take Junior over his lesson 8 or 9 times, but Junior wouldn't remember a single word afterward. He was a dumb little thing. Adeline wasn't as dumb as Junior, but she didn't do much better. She thought it was funny to learn words. She would laugh the whole time Raymond was helping her. They never did learn their 1, 2, 3s. When I was the only one going to school, Mama would buy one loaf of bread a week and a jar of peanut butter and jelly for lunch. I had a peanut butter sandwich every day. Now that all three of us were in school, she couldn't afford the loaf of bread. So she bought 10 pounds of flour instead of the 5 she had always bought. Each night she would make biscuits and fix 2 biscuits with peanut butter for each of us. I kept the lunch bag, and Adeline and Junior would come to me for their lunch at 12. I remember that once when I was eating with some of my classmates, I pulled my peanut butter biscuits out of that lunch bag, and they laughed at me all day. After that embarrassment, I never took those biscuits to school again. We ate our lunch on our way to school every morning. All day long, I was hungry, but it was better than being laughed at by my classmates. Sometimes during the lunch hour, Adeline and Junior would tell me they were hungry, and I would send them to the water fountain to fill up on water. Times really got hard at home. Mama was trying to buy clothes for the three of us, feed us, and keep us in school. She just couldn't do it on $5 a week. Food began to get even scarcer. Mama discovered that the old white lady living in the big white... Now we ate milk and bread all the time, milk with crumbled cornbread in it. Then Mrs. Johnson started giving her the dinner leftovers, and we ate those. Things got so bad that Mama started crying again, and she cried until school was out. One Saturday, I went to get some clabber milk, and the old white lady asked me to sweep her porch and sidewalks. After I had finished, she gave me a quarter and didn't take the quarter Mama had given me for the milk. When I got home and told Mama, she laughed until she cried. Then she sent me up there every day to see if the old lady wanted her porch swept. I was 9 years old, and I had my first job. I earned 75 cents and 2 gallons of milk a week. Soon after I started working for that old lady, I stopped drinking her milk. One evening, I was cleaning the back porch where she kept it when a little Negro boy came to buy 2 gallons. She came in to get them while he waited out in the backyard. She kept the milk in 3 old safes with screen doors. I saw her open one of them and pour some milk out of a big dishpan. Then she went out to the yard, leaving the safe door open. Now this old lady had 8 cats that also lived on the back porch. About 5 of them scrambled into the open safe and began lapping up the milk in the dishpan. She was fussy about her cats, so I didn't yell at them or shoo them away. I just let them eat. She'll run them out and pour that milk out when she come back in, I thought. But when she came back, she just let those cats help themselves. When they had had enough, she pushed them away from the milk and closed the safe door. I stood there looking at all of this, and I thought of how many times I had drunk that milk. I'll starve before I eat any more of it, I thought. I could hardly wait to tell Mama, but when I did, she didn't believe me. She probably is going to give the rest of that milk to them cats, too. I don't think that woman would sell us milk she let cats eat out of, Mama said. I didn't argue with her. I will still bring the milk home, I thought. Y'all can eat it, but not me. I didn't keep that job long. That big old white house had the biggest porches I had ever seen. It had a porch on the bottom and top floors circling the entire house, which gave the house a rounded look. Pretty soon, the old lady even had me sweeping the inside of the house downstairs where she lived and dusting the furniture. She started keeping me up there all day. Mama didn't like that. One day, she kept me up there until after dark. Mama came up there and got me. "What she got you doing she have you up there all day?" Mama asked me when we got home. "I sweep the porches and dust the furniture and sweep the bottom house. I was washing out some stockings for her today," I told her. "You go up there tomorrow and you tell her you ain't gonna come back no more. You hear? She been trying to kill you for 75 cents and that little shit milk she gives you. Tell her you gotta stay at home with Adeline and Junior.
The next morning, I went and swept the porches and cleaned the house and stayed up there all day. When I had finished, I told her what Mama told me to tell her. I didn't really want to quit working for her. I got a good feeling out of earning 3/4 and 2 gallons of milk a week. It made me feel good to be able to give Adeline and Junior each 1/4 and then have one for myself. When school started again, things were still pretty rough, so Mrs. Johnson got one of her friends, Mrs. Claiborne, to give me a job. Mrs. Claiborne taught home economics at the White School. I worked for her every evening after school and all day Saturdays. I really liked this job because I made almost as much as Mama. Mrs. Claiborne paid me $3 a week, and the work was easy compared to what I had been doing for 75 cents. Now I could pay our way to the movies every Saturday and then give Mama $2 to buy bread and peanut butter for our lunch. Besides that, I was learning a lot from Mrs. Claiborne. She taught me what a balanced meal was and how to set a table and how to cook foods we never ate at home. I'd never known anything about having meat, vegetables, and a salad. I enjoyed learning these things, not that they were helpful at our house. For instance, we never set a table because we never had but one fork or spoon each. We didn't have knives and didn't need them because we never had meat. Mrs. Claiborne was in charge of selling candy, peanuts, and hot dogs during the Friday night football and basketball games at her school. On Saturdays when I went to work, she would give me the leftover wieners and some of the peanuts and candy. Now, when I got off work on Saturdays, I'd run all the way home with what she had given me. Adeline and Junior would be sitting out in the street waiting on me. I'd give them some of the peanuts and candy and take the wieners to Mama. On Sunday, she'd make them for us. The wieners and the $3 a week that I earned kept us from being hungry at school and at home. Mrs. Claiborne's husband was a businessman. The only thing I knew about businessmen at the time was that they carried briefcases, smoked cigars, and wore suits every day. Mr. Claiborne was nice, so I thought all businessmen were nice. One Saturday, I was setting the table for them, and he asked me to set up a place for myself. I sat down with them, the first white people I had ever eaten at the same table with. I was so nervous. We sat in silence eating. Dessert was served, and then they started talking to me. "Essie, how do you like school?" Mr. Claiborne asked.
"Oh, it's all right," I answered.
"What kind of grades you make?" he asked. "I make A's in everything but arithmetic, and I make B's in that," I said. "See, I told you she's very smart," Mrs. Claiborne said. "What would you like to do after you finish school, Essie?" he asked. "I don't know. Mama say I could be a teacher like Mrs. Claiborne and Mrs. Johnson," I said. Mr. Claiborne just nodded his head. When I was doing the dishes, Mrs. Claiborne came to help me, and she told me that Mr. Claiborne thought that I was very smart. She said that she didn't know many 10-year-old girls who worked to keep herself and her sister and brother in school. After that Saturday, I ate with them every time I was there for a meal. They started treating me like I was their own child. They would correct me when I spoke wrong, and Mrs. Claiborne would tell me about places she had traveled and people she met while traveling. I was learning so much from them. Sick or well, I went to work. I was afraid if I stayed home, I would miss out on something. I came home from work one day, and it seemed as though Mama's belly had gotten big overnight. I knew she was going to have another baby, and I also knew it was for Raymond. Now that she had gotten fat, he wasn't coming by anymore. He hadn't been to the house in almost a month. Again, Mama started crying every night, like she did when Junior was a baby and my daddy was staying with Florence all the time. Then I thought Raymond had left her for that yellow woman his people wanted him to marry.
When I heard Mama crying at night, I felt so bad. She wouldn't cry until we were all in bed and she thought we were sleeping. Every night I would lie awake for hours listening to her sobbing quietly in her pillow. The bigger she got, the more she cried. And I did too. I cried because I thought she would make me quit school and work full-time for Mrs. Claiborne to take care of all of us. It seemed as though any day she would have to quit work. I had worked late for Mrs. Claiborne one evening, and when I got off work, it was raining. I didn't have an umbrella or anything. By the time I got home, I was soaking wet. I was so mad because I had on my first new dress in almost 2 years. Mama had bought 5 yards of beautiful pink flowered material for $1 at the bargain store. She had a lady make dresses for me and Adeline. We had both worn our dresses to school that day. Now, mine was all wet and had lost its newness. All the way home, I was thinking about my wet, sagging dress and Adeline's new dress hanging against the wall, still looking new. When I walked in the door, Mama was singing. I forgot about my wet dress. Instead of looking depressed and sick as usual, she seemed so happy. Dripping wet, I stood in the door a long time just looking at her. I didn't know why she was happy, and I didn't really care. I was just glad to see her like this. She was walking around carrying her big belly like it was as light as a feather. "Take that wet dress off before you get a cold," she said as she noticed me standing in the door. Any other time, she would have said something like, "Look how wet you is. Why didn't you wait till it stopped raining?" That night, I listened to see if she would cry, and she didn't. So I didn't have anything to cry for that night either. She walked around in that spell of happiness for 3 or 4 days. Then, one evening, I came home after work and found Raymond there. When I walked in the door, he was rubbing her belly, and she was blushing down. I got so mad standing in that door, I started trembling with anger. I felt like going up to him and slapping his hand off her belly. Mama was laughing now, I thought, but I knew she would be crying again as soon as her belly went down and he made it big again. When they noticed me standing in the door looking at him disapprovingly, he jerked his hand away. Mama stopped blushing. They both could tell that I didn't like it at all. In fact, when he left, I didn't say anything to Mama. I just went about the house doing anything I could find to do to keep from talking to her. Raymond had brought some candy for us. Adeline and Junior were eating theirs and grinning, but I didn't touch the candy Mama had left for me. If Adeline and Junior knew Raymond had made Mama cry every night like I did, they wouldn't be eating that candy either, I thought. Later that evening, when I was taking my bath in the tin tub, Mama came in the kitchen. Without saying a word, she got down on her knees with her belly touching the tub and washed my back. She was still happy, but she knew I wasn't. She was putting lots of soap on my back and scratching it and rubbing it good. Usually she fussed at us for using so much soap. "We gonna be moving pretty soon," she said. I sat there stiff and didn't say anything. "The Johnsons probably is asking her to move because she is too big to work," I thought. She kept rubbing my back. "Ray done built us a new house," she said. "What?" I yelled, almost jumping out of the tub. "And you can quit working for Mrs. Claiborne as soon as we move," she said. "Mrs. Claiborne treat me good, and I don't want to stop working for her," I said. "Okay, you can go on working for her if you want to, but Ray will be able to take care of us now," she said. I cried that night because I was so happy. I no longer hated Raymond for feeling Mama's belly. All night I lay awake thinking of how Mama must be feeling to have someone build a house for her after she had been killing herself for more than 7 years, working on one job after another, trying to feed us and keep us in school and all. We had moved 6 times since she and Daddy separated. Now, she would have a place of her own, and we were going to be moving off white people's places, probably for good. Chapter 4. We stayed at the Johnsons until the end of the summer. Then, one day, we moved. Raymond had built the house at the bottom of the Ash Quarters, right off Highway 24. We were now living next door to Raymond's mother, Miss Pearl, and all the rest of Raymond's people. Somehow, by hook or by crook, Raymond and his entire family had bought land there, along the gravel road that formed the main street. On the very first day we moved there, Mama already showed signs of nervousness. Raymond, with the help from his brothers, had built the house for us with his own hands. It was a green frame house with a gray front porch. There were 5 rooms, more than we had ever lived in. A living room, 3 bedrooms, and a kitchen. The only thing wrong was that we still had an outdoor toilet. Raymond and his brothers had also built Miss Pearl's house, and she had a bathroom. Raymond said that later on he would build a bathroom for our house, too. We didn't have running water in the house either, but the water line had been run to our house and a water faucet had been put up in the front yard. At least we had plenty of water to fill that tin tub. The inside of the house had not been finished when we moved in. Raymond and his brothers worked on it daily, sealing it with sheetrock. When all the sheetrock was up, Mama and I went to town and bought some beautiful flowered wallpaper for each room, except the kitchen. Then, it was time to buy the new furniture. Mama always took me with her to buy things for the house. "Mama, let's get the beds first," I said, as we walked into the only furniture store in Centerville. "Okay," she said, "but don't let me forget the icebox." I think Mama was a little scared, because this was the first time she had ever bought furniture. Before, we had always been given old, discarded furniture by other people. We looked over all the beds, and Mama picked her bed in no time. She selected one with a solid mahogany headboard that was part of a mahogany bedroom set. But I still didn't see my bed, the one I wanted for my room. "Have you got a bed with big, tall, brown posts?" I asked the sales lady. "Yes. We have one with posts," she said. "Here, don't you like this one?" she asked, pointing to a little mahogany bed with little straight posts. "That's not what I want," I told her. "I want one with big, tall posts and a cover over the top." "Where did you see that kind of bed?" she asked, looking at me as if I were crazy. "The lady I used to work for had a bed like that," Mama answered quickly. "You got one like that?" I asked the sales lady again. "No, we don't carry them, and it would cost too much for you. How old are you?" she asked me coldly. 11. I'll be 12 next week," I answered. The sales lady acted as if she was mad, and so did Mama. So I took the bed with the little brown posts. Then Mama picked out a green 3-piece sofa set for the living room. Mama asked for an icebox, and they didn't have one. I was glad, because then I hoped she would buy one of those nice big refrigerators like the Johnsons and the Claibornes had. But she didn't. She gave the lady a down payment on the furniture, and we left. On the way home, she kept telling me I shouldn't want everything white folks had. She said that Miss Ola's bed cost more money than our house had cost. "Miss Claiborne and Miss Ola done ruined you," she said. I often got the feeling that Mama didn't like Mrs. Claiborne acting like I was her daughter. The way she said they had ruined me, I knew for a fact that she didn't like them treating me like their equal. I remember once I had told her that I ate at the same table with the Claibornes, and she asked me, "What they say to you when y'all be eating?"
So I told her, "We just eat and talk."
"Eat and talk," she said. "What you gotta talk about with them white folks?"
After the furniture was delivered, we settled down. There were only a few things that kept us from being middle class: the outdoor toilet, the wood stove, and the tin bathtub. However, we did have mahogany furniture, and Raymond had a small bank account from the service and a car. Now that we had moved into Raymond's house, he brought James to live with us. James was now 4 years old. He had gotten used to living with Miss Pearl, and he wouldn't stay with us in the beginning. Every night he would cry until Mama and Raymond sent him over to Miss Pearl's to spend the night. When we went back to Old Willis High that September, I was 12 years old and in sixth grade. Adeline was in third grade and Junior in second. We no longer carried one sandwich apiece to school. We were now able to carry two, and they weren't always peanut butter either. Sometimes we had bologna. Everything at school seemed to take on a different look. I got a big kick out of showing off my bologna sandwich and drinking the cola I bought from the snack bar each day. But my new happiness didn't last very long. We had been living in the midst of Raymond's people for about 3 months, and none of them had befriended Mama. Adeline, Junior, and I had been accepted, at least by the children. All of us had become friends in school. Raymond's sister, Darlene, was my age and in the same grade, and his sister, Cherie, was the same age and grade as Adeline. Then Raymond had 5 or 6 little nephews that Junior played with, but the adults hardly spoke to Mama. Miss Pearl and Raymond's older sisters would pass right by her without saying anything, and Mama would be so hurt. Sometimes she would sit on the porch and stare over at their house, as if she wished she could just go over there and talk to them. I think Mama thought she could somehow make the adults accept her through us. So she began to make us study our lessons at home twice as hard as before. I was still doing my homework alone, but every night now, Raymond would drill Adeline and Junior again and again over the same lessons.
"Little man, where is your book?" he would say to Junior. Or, "Come on, Junior, you ain't got time to be playing."
After he had finished with Junior, he was often too disgusted with him to go on to Adeline, and he would tell me to help Adeline with her lesson before I started mine. Within a month, I was helping both of them, because no matter how Raymond drilled Junior, he just didn't learn anything. Now, I had very little time for my own homework, but I still managed to keep my grades among the highest in my class. After Raymond had given Adeline and Junior up and told Mama, "They are the dumbest little things I ever saw," Mama started in on me. She was always telling me things like, "Y'all gotta do good in school. Y'all can't let Darlene and Cherie be smarter than y'all. They already think they is better than y'all 'cause they is yellow." When she said this to me, I knew she didn't mean y'all. She meant me. She had given Adeline and Junior up just as Raymond had. I was already making better grades than Darlene. However, now that I realized Mama was depending upon me to keep my grades higher, I tried even harder. Soon, a visible strain of competition developed between us. I remember in class, we would try to outdo each other in answering more questions, working more problems, and even trying to outread each other. Cherie and Adeline got along well together. Neither one of them was the competing kind. But after a while, Darlene and I didn't get along very well at all. She worked twice as hard as me, and she hated like hell that I still made better grades. Because my grades were going so well, I decided I could afford to go out for the junior high basketball team, the only extracurricular activity offered for sixth graders. Mrs. Willis, the principal's wife and one of the most active teachers at Willis High, was my coach. She was the eighth grade homeroom teacher.
She managed the snack bar at noon, and now she had organized a junior high basketball team. Because I was the tallest girl on the team, she worked with me more than with the others, drilling me mostly in jumping and rebounding. I would practice an extra hour each day after school, plus the 2 evenings a week that I wasn't working for Mrs. Claiborne. By the time we got ready for our first game, I was the best player on the team. I was also the most scared player because Mrs. Willis expected so much of me. Our first game was to be played on a Thursday in November at some little country school I had never heard of. I kept hoping it would be called off. It rained that Wednesday, and on Thursday morning it was cold and cloudy. I remember I got out of bed and prayed that the outdoor court at the other school would be too wet for us to play. But it wasn't. In fact, when Mrs. Willis called up to ask about the court, the coach told her that it was in good shape and that he was still expecting us. We arrived late. The other team was already warming up. Once I looked at those girls out there, all the little courage I had managed to muster up was completely gone. These were the biggest girls I had ever seen. They were even larger than the girls that played on our high school team. They looked like grown women. "These are some mighty big girls," Mrs. Willis commented to us as if we hadn't already noticed them, and I felt my blood stop circulating. "What you all gotta do," she advised us, "is guard them close, and if possible, get them to foul a lot. Try to keep them from that goal, too." Then she looked at me and started to say something, but changed her mind when she saw how I was shaking. The referee blew his whistle, and the girls from both teams went to the center of the court and surrounded him. I found myself standing there, too. "All you girls know the rules of the game?" he asked, and we nodded yes. "Well, remember, you have only 5 fouls, and you are then taken out of the game, and you can only bounce the ball 3 times before it's passed on to the next girl." When the game started, the referee blew his whistle again and passed the ball to one of the girls on my team. She passed the ball to the other forward opposite her, and the forward passed it on to me. I was supposed to pass the ball back to her and fall back to play the pivot, but I didn't. I just looked up at the big girl that was guarding me and froze. "Play that ball, Moody!" I heard Mrs. Willis yell. I held the ball up as though I was going to pass it, but again I froze. "If you don't play that ball," I heard Mrs. Willis say. I looked toward the goal, and the only thing I could remember was that I was supposed to shoot. I didn't bounce or pass. I ran straight to the goal with the ball held high above my head and shot it. All the time I was running, the referee was blowing his whistle, and the spectators standing around the court were laughing like crazy. Mrs. Willis took me out of the game in the first quarter. We lost, and everyone blamed me and made fun of me all the way back to school. I had enough embarrassment from that game to last me a year. Every day after that, I would sit in my classroom after the lunch hour and watch the other girls on the team practice. Once or twice, Mrs. Willis asked me to come back to the team, but I wouldn't. It was one thing to play ball among people you knew, but I didn't like playing outsiders. Just before Christmas, I came home from Mrs. Claiborne's one evening and found Mama's sister, Alberta, at the house. As I walked in, she was running around like she was lost. Mama was in bed. I looked at Mama, and she had big drops of sweat dropping off her face. Her eyes were closed, and she was biting her lips as though she was in great pain. I stood there, looking at her for a long time before Alberta saw me standing there. "Essie May, come here and help me find some clean rags," she said to me. "What's wrong with Mama, Alberta?" I asked her. "She is about to have the baby," she answered, plowing her way through the clothes in the dresser drawers. "Look in that big box under the door in Junior's room. I said. Mama's got a lot of rags in there.
I hope Raymond hurry up, she said. Too Sweet is going to have this baby, and I don't know what to do, she continued, almost crying.
When she said that, I ran back in the room to look at Mama. Her eyes were still closed, and she was lying flat on her back, clutching the sides of the bed. I looked at her belly and saw it move. I thought sure the baby was coming. I opened my mouth to call Alberta, but the words wouldn't come. I was so scared.
Essie Mae, come out of there. Go outside and see if that water is getting hot,
Alberta yelled to me, but I couldn't move.
What is she going to do with hot water? I thought.
Get to the yard and look at that water, Essie Mae.
Alberta pushed me all the way through Junior's room to the kitchen door. I walked outside and found a big fire burning around the washpot. It was now dark, and the fire lit up the whole yard. I just stood there, staring at the pot, full of water, and the big blaze leaping up around it. The whole scene was like killing a hog at night. As I was standing out there, Raymond drove up, hitting the brakes so hard he sent rocks sailing into the air. He ran around to the side of the car and opened the door to help some old woman get out. She was carrying a ragged-looking black medicine bag and looked so dried up she could hardly walk. Raymond was leading her to the front porch when he noticed me standing in the yard.
Essie Mae, he called to me, what are you doing here? Go on over to Pearl's where Adeline and Junior is.
I walked out of the yard and headed down the road toward Miss Pearl's, but halfway there I turned around and went back. I stood behind Raymond's car for a long time, looking and listening. At first, it was real quiet. They had cut out all the lights but the one in Mama's room. I couldn't see anyone moving around inside. A little while later, I heard Mama screaming and hollering and carrying on. Raymond came running out in the backyard and got a bucket of hot water from the washpot. All I could hear was Mama hollering from the house. Except for her yells, everything else was still. I stood out there thinking how bad it must hurt to have a baby. I would never have a baby if I had to holler and carry on like Mama, I thought. And that old lady, what did she know about delivering babies? Suppose she did something wrong and Mama died from it. I would kill Raymond if she died. He should have taken Mama to the hospital, I thought. Instead, he went out in the country and got that old woman to deliver Mama's baby. When Mama finally stopped yelling, I went over to Miss Pearl's. Well past midnight, Raymond came over there and told us we could come home. As soon as he said that, Adeline, Junior, and I ran all the way home to see the little baby. For the first time, we weren't scared to run down that dark road that late at night. I was the first one to make it home. When I walked in the door, that old lady was sitting beside the bed with her little black bag at her feet. She looked up and smiled at me when I walked over to see the baby, and something started crawling all over me, and I started to shake.
Why is she still here? I thought. Something must be wrong with Mama.
But then I saw that Mama was asleep.
Is the baby here?
Adeline asked as she came in the door with Junior following her.
Stop all that noise,
Alberta said from the kitchen.
Why was Alberta still here too? I wondered.
Adeline, Junior, and I were all standing at the foot of Mama's bed, and the old lady just sat there smiling.
Mama must be sick, I thought. Alberta, is Mama sick?
I asked as she walked into Mama's room.
Is you crazy? Show she's sick after just having a baby.
Then Mama opened her eyes and saw all of us, me, Adeline, Junior, and Alberta, standing at the foot of her bed.
Show them the baby, Too Sweet, Alberta said, so they can go to bed.
There it was, lying right next to Mama. She lifted the cover back, and Adeline, Junior, and I walked to the head of the bed and peeped at it. It was a girl. She didn't look like she was just born like most babies. She looked like she was already 4 or 5 months old. "She is so big," I said.
"She is big," Mama said. "She weighed 10 pounds and 3 ounces.
"That's as much as I weigh, huh, Mama?"
that little stupid junior asked.
"Your belly weighed that much,"
Mama said to him.
"You weighed that much, Essie Mae, when you came,"
the old lady said to me. I didn't know how she knew I weighed that much. I wanted to ask her, but I was scared. Something about her gave me the creeps.
"Your mama brings big babies," the old lady said. "Every one of her babies weighed from 8 to 10 pounds.
I looked at her shocked this time, and I figured she must have delivered all of us. No wonder she looks so old, I thought.
"Aunt Caroline, you ready to go?" Raymond asked her as he walked in the door. "Yes, I guess so. And Too Sweet is going to be all right," the old lady said. "Y'all go to bed,"
Raymond said to us, and he and the old lady left. I got up early the next morning because I wanted to talk to Mama and get a good look at the baby before I went to work. Mama was asleep when I went into her room. Her face looked different, I thought. So calm and young. She hadn't looked young for a long time. Maybe it was because she was happy now. She had never been happy before to have a baby. I remember how she had cried all the time after Junior and James were born. I thought she'd gotten to the point where she hated babies. For a long time, I stood there looking at her. I didn't want to wake her up. I wanted to enjoy and preserve that calm, peaceful look on her face. I wanted to think she would always be that happy, so I would never be unhappy again either. Adeline and Junior were too young to feel the things I felt and know the things I knew about Mama. They couldn't remember when she and Daddy separated. They had never heard her cry at night as I had, or worked and helped as I had done when we were starving. No, they didn't know the misery Mama suffered. Not even Raymond knew. Mama loved him too much to fight with him or have him see her cry. But even while I was standing there with all those dreams about the eternal happiness I wanted for Mama, I knew deep down in my heart that it wouldn't last. Deep down, I knew that she wasn't really happy now and that she hadn't been since we'd moved. I had seen her sit on the porch too many times and look over at Miss Pearl's with hate in her eyes. I also knew that Raymond's people hadn't really accepted Adeline, Junior, and me either, even though we went to their houses often and played with their children. But the biggest worry I had was the fact that Raymond still hadn't married Mama. Now she would have 2 babies for him and 3 for my daddy, and still no husband. Mama didn't think I knew this, but I did. I knew that even though she was living in the same house with Raymond, and even though he supported us, she still wasn't safe without being married to him. Some Sundays, Raymond would go over to Miss Pearl's and spend the afternoon. Mama would be so uneasy every minute he was over there, and if Raymond came home in a bad mood, I would hear Mama mumble to herself, "I know they don't do nothing but sit over there and talk about me." I was always afraid that any day Raymond could be taken away from Mama. I didn't think she could take it if that happened. She had waited for him so long. I got myself all flustered standing there thinking about Mama and all we had been through. Now I didn't even feel like seeing the baby or talking with Mama. We were out of school for the Christmas holidays, and I was helping Mrs. Claiborne do her Christmas cleaning, so I just left Mama sleeping and went to work. That evening, as I was coming home a little early from Mrs. Claiborne's, I saw Raymond and Miss Pearl walking down the road toward our house.
"She can't be coming to see us," I thought.
After all, she doesn't even speak to Mama.
But she certainly looked as if she was coming. When I reached our front walk, I hurried inside. Mama was sitting up in bed when I walked in.
Raymond and Miss Pearl is coming down the road, I said. She looked like she is coming here.
What? Mama asked me as if she didn't believe me. She got all nervous. Her face went through a million different changes as she started patting her hair, straightening the covers on the bed, and looking at the baby to see if she was wet. In what seemed like seconds, Raymond and his mother were walking through the door. I just stood at the foot of Mama's bed, waiting to see what was going to happen.
Come on in, I heard Raymond say to Miss Pearl. Where is my little girl?
Miss Pearl cooed as she entered Mama's room. Mama looked at me and then pulled the covers off the baby. Miss Pearl didn't come all the way into Mama's room. She stood in the doorway and didn't move one step from there. She acted as if Mama wasn't even in the house. Raymond walked over to the bed and picked up the baby and carried it to her.
She does look like her grandmother, Miss Pearl said, shaking the baby and carrying on over her.
I told you she looked just like you, said Raymond. Then he pulled in a chair from the living room for her to sit on. All this time, Mama looked like she was so anxious for Miss Pearl to just speak to her. The least Miss Pearl could have done was ask Mama how she felt, even if she didn't mean it. But Miss Pearl wasn't even about to do that.
I ain't got time to sit down, Ray. I gotta go cook dinner, she said quickly, and gave Raymond back the baby.
He took the baby over to the bed and handed it to Mama. Then he and Miss Pearl left the house. As soon as they walked out, Mama started fussing.
She got some nerve coming in my house and not even speaking to me. How dare Ray bring her in here and run over me?
I looked at Mama, and now tears were running down her face. I didn't say a word to her. I just turned and walked out of the room onto the front porch. Miss Pearl and Raymond were standing in the road talking. I sat down on the front steps and stared at them. I thought of the calm, peaceful face Mama had had that morning before I went to work. After seeing her tears again so soon, I knew that, as long as Raymond's people could make her cry, they would.
Raymond is just a fool, I thought. He is not a man at all. He could easily put a stop to this. No, he's too scared of hurting their feelings.
I sat there on the steps wishing that Mama had never moved in with him. Looking at him now, I could see he would never break with his family for Mama, and they would never accept her, no matter how hard she tried to make them like her. A few days later, Aunt Caroline came by to check on Mama and see if she was ready to name the baby. She brought some papers for Mama to fill out and send off to get the baby's birth certificate. I had heard Raymond and Mama talk of naming the baby after Miss Pearl, but I knew Mama wouldn't do that now. Mama named the baby Virginia after Mrs. Johnson and called her Jenny Ann, same as Mrs. Johnson is called. After Aunt Caroline left, Mama told me that she had also delivered Adeline and Junior and all my grandmother's children. She and Aunt Mary Green, who had delivered me and James, had been midwives for every Negro baby between Woodville and Centerville for the past 40 years. Aunt Caroline even delivered babies for families who had moved out of the country. When Mama told me Aunt Caroline only charged her $10, I figured she must have had to deliver a lot of babies to keep alive. After I had heard all this about Aunt Caroline, the thought of her didn't give me the creeps anymore. In fact, now I thought of her as a great old lady. She must have really enjoyed bringing babies to bring them for so little and to continue doing it at such an old age. A week later, we had our first Christmas in our new house. When I got off work Christmas Eve, Mrs. Claiborne gave me $5 for a present and paid me $7 for helping her do her Christmas cleaning.
In addition to that, she gave me something that was wrapped so prettily I was tempted not to open it. $12 was more money than I had ever had at one time. When Mrs. Claiborne first gave it to me, I felt like hugging and kissing her. The Claibornes and the Johnsons were the nicest white people I had ever known. All the way home, I thought of how nice these people were to us. Mrs. Claiborne was white, but she and Mr. Claiborne treated me like I was their own daughter. They were always giving me things and encouraging me to study hard and learn as much as I could. Mr. Johnson's mother, Miss Ola, had done the same. She taught me how to read when I was in school and helped me with my homework when my own mother was unable to do it. Then I began to think about Miss Pearl and Raymond's people and how they hated Mama, and for no reason at all than the fact that she was a couple of shades darker than the other members of their family. Yet they were Negroes, and we were also Negroes. I just didn't see Negroes hating each other so much. When I got home, Alberta was there baking cakes, and Mama was sitting in the kitchen with her. Alberta and Mama got along very well. Alberta was married now and had just moved to the neighborhood about 2 weeks before. I was glad that Mama would finally have someone to talk to. Now she wouldn't have to sit out on the front porch and look over at Miss Pearl's. She and Alberta could visit each other. The following morning, I got up and smelled apples and oranges all over the house. The kitchen was scented with freshly baked cakes, and I heard carols playing on the new radio. I thought of the past and what all the other Christmases had been like. For the first time, this seemed to me like a real Christmas. Chapter 5. Even though Mama stopped going to Mount Pleasant when we moved from the country, she continued to pay her membership dues. Raymond and Miss Pearl then belonged to Centerville Baptist, the largest Negro church in town. Now that we were living with Raymond, Mama started thinking about joining Raymond's church. She figured that maybe she could get in with Miss Pearl then by going to their church regularly. One Saturday in early spring, she went to town and bought a new dress and hat for herself. That night, before we went to bed, she told us that we'd have to get up early the next morning because we were going to Centerville Baptist. I couldn't fall asleep for a long time, thinking about going there. Raymond had once taken us for a ride and showed it to us. It was a big white frame building on a brick base with cement steps all the way across the front. It had great big windows painted in different shades of blue and green. I wondered as I fell asleep what it was like inside. Next morning when Mama woke us up, she was already dressed and our breakfast was on the table. She rushed us through eating and all and then helped us dress in our best Sunday clothes. "They can't say we came to church half-dressed or looking any kind of way," she said. All the way to church, she kept looking at us in the back seat of the car. "Stop messing with that ribbon before you untie it," she said to Adeline, who was playing with the ribbon on one of her three plaits. Mama was so nervous. Once she looked back and Junior had his hand in his mouth and she slapped him. Raymond drove along smiling and acting like he wasn't nervous, but I could tell he was. When we got there, we were late. Everyone was already inside and we could hear them singing. As we walked in the door, two ushers met us. One directed Raymond down the right aisle to the men's section. The other led us down the left aisle where a group of ladies and children sat. About halfway down, I spotted Miss Pearl, sitting with Cherie and Darlene and their older sisters, Betty and Vera, in the center pews. When they saw us, they started hunching and whispering, and I knew they were saying things about us. The usher directed us to seats in the right pews, somewhat behind them. I could see them easily now, and I was glad the usher had seated us there. I kept looking at them, and every now and then they would look back to where we sat. "Stop looking over there at them," Mama said as she caught me smiling at Cherie and Darlene. I was sorry that I had looked and smiled at them, since they didn't smile back. Now that they were out in public, with Miss Pearl and Betty, they were acting like they didn't even know us. After this, I'll never play with them again, I thought. After we were seated for a while, I forgot about them, and I began looking around. Since it was Pastoral Sunday, Reverend Polk's regular preaching Sunday, the church was crowded. Just like at Mount Pleasant, every member showed up to pay his dues and put on a good front for the pastor. I tried to notice every little thing that happened to see if things were different in a big town church. First, a couple of deacons began the service by offering two long, boring prayers. As each one finished, he hummed a song and the congregation hummed along with him. At Mount Pleasant, the men sang through their noses, and here the deacons were doing the same thing, singing through their noses and hollering and going on. At Mount Pleasant, I had even seen men cry in church like women when they finished praying. At least these men weren't crying, I thought, but they were hollering just the same. And just like at Mount Pleasant, I couldn't understand one word of any song. All the old ladies did, though. They were humming right along with them. While the collection for the sick was being taken up, the choir sang a few songs. This was the first time I had been in a church that had a choir. I used to listen.